Hello, welcome, Pavin. So this time we've got you from your home, and this evening, let me just actually get the ball rolling. Today we've got Dr. Pavin Kumar sharing on how to reclaim your power. And Pavin's going to be sharing a number of insights. He's a very practical speaker, very entertaining without making you forget what you want to walk away with. So he's going to be sharing insights on what makes you feel powerless, what drains your power, and how is it that we accidentally give it away? And then what is it going to take for me to own my power? And what are the techniques and things that I can do to recharge myself when I feel like I've been pushed to the limit? Dr. Pavan Kumar is a dentist with 25 years experience plus. He's a practice owner, but also a dental educator. So somebody with a very large, full-on timetable. And so I'm going to now click out and allow you to enjoy Pavan. I will return after the meditation to put forward your questions to Pavan. So if you'd like to submit any questions, do it through the question and answer link, and I will then ask Pavan those questions on your behalf. Pavan, all yours. Thank you.
Okay, so welcome everybody. Nice to join you again. I've been enjoying these sessions more and more, just sharing experiences, so it's quite nice. And I like to be there in person, and when I'm there in person, there's a different energy. So I'm imagining you're all there sitting in the auditorium, so I'm trying to create that energy again. So tonight's talk, talking about feeling powerless, what makes us feel powerless, why do we become like that, and how do we regain our power? And some of the conversation that myself and Arti were just having now touched on some of the things I want to share with tonight. So let me just start with feeling powerless. I mean, you know, why do we feel powerless? And I was reflecting on my own little journey. And the analogy I came with was once I remember I was at home with my family and there was a power cut. So, you know, loss of power, physical power, electricity. And it was amazing how much impact it had. Didn't realize, you know, all the lights went off, the alarm went off, the phone was off the hook, it said mobiles. But, you know, it was a bit, and it was winter as well, so it's quite cold. Heating wasn't on. So, you know, I felt quite helpless to the point where, you know, I told my wife and my daughter to go to sister-in-law's house and it was warm and they can stay there. And I kind of wrapped an extra coat, you know, two coats on to keep warm and stayed in bed and kept the lights on and waiting for it to come on, thinking what's happening. And at that point, I know we're talking about physical power cut, but I think that's a good example or analogy how I felt powerless. You know, it was something out of my control. I'd lost control of what was going on, and I really felt I wasn't in charge of what I was doing. And that for me is a definition of powerless, when you haven't got control of how you feel and what's going on around you. So I think that would be my definition. So anytime that one feels vulnerable, you know, that's probably losing your power. And I think it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, that was a sharp, instant thing that happened with the power cut. But I think when we're talking about losing your power emotionally, I think it happens slowly. You know, the old scenario of, and I've probably been victim to this at some point, where, you know, things are going on and you kind of feel a bit downtrodden and you feel things are unfair and you just think, you know what, I'll just stay quiet. You know, it'll soon sort itself out. And you just hope that things will change. But slowly what you're doing is giving away your power. And you're giving away your power. And the power you're giving away is what you need actually to change that. And what happens, the situation where you're feeling powerless, the other person involved in it who's taking your power is probably enhancing his position and taking more power. So that kind of status quo continues. So I think that's one thing. So it doesn't happen slowly. So I think sometimes we have to be a little bit switched on and make sure that we don't allow it to happen. So it's not the kind of thing that would happen overnight. It's a slow, insidious thing that can happen in the background. And I think what tends to happen is, you know, when you feel powerless, you can feel vulnerable, unhappy, frustrated. And sometimes, you know, sometimes recently, I've actually been asked the question about work, and a few times you feel like you're just surviving. But when you're getting that feeling of just surviving, I think that you're losing your power. So I think we can diagnose what it is when you lose your power. It's a feeling of helplessness. It's a feeling of feeling frustration, angry. And it could be with politicians. It could be with your spouse, partner, any kind of relationship. It could be with systems. It could be with finance. So those kind of two things are the main kind of things where you can lose your power to. So I think the other thing to look at it now is, so, okay, I've lost my power. I've lost this kind of feeling of feeling in control. So what kind of power are we talking about? Are we talking about power as in like power, or are we just talking about power? So I think for me, I would say my power, for me personally, I looked at it in two ways. One is power of external things. So a power of, say, money, title, relationship, the people you know, the networks that you have. So that can give you power, by agency, some people may call it. And the other power is the power of the self. So I think you can see by just the definition, when I was talking about how we lose our power, I'm talking more about those agency powers, you know, where you're relying on your power through relationship, money, title, friends, networks, and stuff like that. So the difference is that can be taken away, as it is on maybe a daily basis, on a regular basis. It happens a lot. But the one power that really can't be taken away is the power of the self. This is the field of the inner being, the innate self. And we'll delve into that a little bit more. So we really got to shift our identity to this self, this core. And I think that is where we have to tap into our real power. So one is understanding when we lose our power, what it feels like when we lose our power. And the other thing is, okay, so I've lost my power. What do I do to gain it again? Then understanding that, you know, what was my power based on? Was it based on a little bit of not a falsehood, but support materials, like agencies, you know, like I mentioned, money, relationship, friends. Was it based on something that it really had no control over? Because if you imagine, if you have no control over something, you know, like Murphy's Law, Sod's Law, whichever law you call it, that if something will go wrong. And in the same way, something that's not yours to control will go out of control. You will lose control of it. So beware of that. So the only power that I feel for myself personally, and I think for us, is the power of the self. And that's what we need to shift our focus and get back to that. And I want to talk about, you know, this process about becoming powerless. We mentioned about it happening gradually. And sometimes when I've been kind of not a victim of it, and I'll mention the word victim, is because you allow it to be, because you think, oh, you're doing a nice thing, you're doing a good deed by just being passive, allowing it. And you know, it may be seen as a spiritual thing to do, just to allow people to do that. But in fact, what you're doing is you're slowly, chronically eroding away your power without knowing it. And what happens, you just kind of accept the status quo. You just think, well, you know, I'll just accept this the way it is. And you almost become defeatist to a point where you think, well, that's my lot. You know, that's what I deserve. Or, you know, that's the way it is. And you just accept it. But what happens is in that moment, and I mentioned this word before, you lose that self-belief. You lose that self-esteem and you become a victim. you actually become a victim of that. And then you can't move out of it. It's almost like a vicious cycle that develops, because you become a victim of it. You lose some self-esteem, you lose self-belief. And what tends to happen, you know, it happens biochemically in our brain, is that our decision-making processes are affected. Basically, we fail to make good decisions, or we fail to make decisive decisions. And, you know, really, we need to explore why I've become a victim. And that's the hard work. So I'm going to talk more about how to change that, how to regain your power. And I think the first thing is, when you do find yourself feeling a victim, or feeling that you feel you're surviving, or you're feeling you're just getting by, or you're feeling, you know, powerless, or you feel drained or something, you know, like I said, the only way we can get ourselves back, and how I got myself back out of a few situations, is to regain the power of the self, this introspection, this focusing on our inner being. And what do I mean by that? I mean we have to change our thought processes. You know, we have to change how we see ourselves. And it's knowing who I am, who I really am. There's three kind of questions, like, who am I? You know, what's my real identity? What am I about? You know, what do I want? You know, what do I want out of life? And, you know, then what do I do? What do I need to do about it? You know, what do I have to do? So these kind of three questions, like knowing who I am, knowing what I want, and then knowing what you need to do. Those three kind of main questions I think I found helpful to get to the core self. And once you're at that core self and you recognize and you create an association with that for yourself, that's the complete opposite of the victim status. Because I think at the core self is this kind of, people call it the chi, the life force, the spirit or soul. It's our being, it's our inner being, and that is kind of an energy source. It's where everything emanates from. And this point, you can begin to empower yourself. And that means by changing your thinking, changing your perception, and having courage to make that change. Now, these things are easy to sit here and talk about. And it can be easy to do sometimes, but I do understand it can be difficult. And for me, some of those things were difficult. So my journey, when I was facing hard times, when I was feeling powerless, when I was feeling part of the system, you know, I didn't really have control. I was working, paying tax, doing my duties, and it was just more of a process. That's what started my personal inquiry. And it took, you know, it took me, I would say, a good 5 years of slow, steady, I'm not a quick learner. It took me a good 5 years of slow, steady practice and exploration to find out who I really am. You know, what am I about? What do I want? And what do I need to do? So it took a little bit of time. And obviously, I had the luxury at that time of not being in a very desperate situation, but being in a situation where I knew there needed to be some change, needed to know that there is a better way ahead, you know, wanted some more enrichment. So that's what started my inquiry. And then when I started doing this inquiry, I found out, you know, what's my real core values? Because I think with anything, what I find is when I work from my core values, it's a certain truth. It's a truth of yourself. And if it doesn't agree with someone else or doesn't align with their feelings or their truth, that's fine, because their truth is their truth. But for my truth, to really get away from this powerless feeling and get into your self-belief, your self-esteem, and your core or being centered, is to understand your values. And you'll know what those values are. You'll know that you're a person who likes honesty, or you're a person who likes courage, or you're a person who likes straight talking. Whatever those values are, you'll see that in somebody else and you'll resonate to it, because it's something you kind of you know, you vibrate the same frequency and you kind of get attracted to it. And, yeah, I like that. It's something either you want or you've had. So I think you can explore yourself and try to find out what are my core values? Love, empathy, respect, courage, humor, whatever it is. And I think when, for myself, when I work from my core values, say one of them could be forgiveness or kindness, then when I come from that kind of space, no matter what I do, no matter what I say, I have a certain amount of courage to speak up, to make decisions, to do something, because for me, that is my truth. And if it's my truth, then it's not wrong for me. So only you can be the author of your own story. You know, that's the thing. You don't want to allow somebody else or some other entity or some other system to author your story. Only you, only your decision is important for that. And that's the whole thing of this introspection and getting back to the core of the self where you can regain that power. So just taking a moment to think back what I just said is like to really connect with your core values. You'll know what they are. You may have one straight away that you can just think, oh yeah, I think I really like, you know, commitment. Or, and then once you know those, whenever you come from that point, it's almost like a filter to change your thoughts and to change your perception. So when you have a thought, if you haven't got this core value sitting in front of your mind or your thought processes, then it'll just go through and your ego will respond or something else, or you react or you'll revert back to being just, okay, I'll stay quiet and let it be. But when you've got your filter of your values, whatever goes through it, you'll respond to it. Rather than react to it, you'll respond to it in a way which is truthful to yourself. So you'll say it with conviction. You'll say it with without any ill intent. You know, so whenever you respond, it'll be non-disingenuous. It'll be a genuine response. So even though it may contradict what someone's saying, but because it's said from your core value, people say, actually, I'll take that. So you're saying it with love. You're saying with a certain kind of gravitas where people will actually take that on board. So I think that's one of the main things for me is connecting with my core values. And whenever I did something or challenged the status quo or responded to something I didn't agree with, then, you know, I found when I responded, people kind of like, okay, I see your point. And they're more responsive to that. So that kind of made me feel more empowered, you know, gave me self-belief. My self-esteem was intact. So, and then that starts another vicious cycle where it almost feeds off itself. So for me, that was quite a pivotal thing to change my thinking. Because you may think, well, how do you change your thinking? You just don't suddenly change your thinking. Well, yeah, you can just change your thinking. I can think about red or I can think about blue. It's a binary choice. Sometimes that binary choice of how you think is difficult because of what's happened before, because you've lost your power. Because that way, when you've lost your power, you probably haven't got the courage or the strength or the emotional strength, spiritual strength, whatever strength you want to call it, the power to make that binary choice of this is how I want to feel. I do not want to feel sad. I do not want to feel belittled. So I think, you know, I think it is as simple as like just trying to think differently. And I think it's easier to do if you've discovered your core values and say, no, this is my truth. Say it with conviction and then things will move forward. Because if you don't, then, you know, you've kind of got into that powerless system and you know, you won't be able to make these kind of changes and choices to change your perception. Because I think those are one of the key things to regain our power is to really change our thinking, change our perception, you know, change the language, you know, rather than say, oh, I can't do this, I'm no good at that. Say, well, I'm going to try this. I've not tried it before. I'm not sure I'm going to do it, but I'm going to try it and see what I do. So even that subtle change of language, just changing positive language, just using more of that, would be enough to help change your perception, would be enough to maybe move out of that kind of powerless feeling and give you that little bit of courage to move forward. And it's almost like, I've said this before in a talk before, and you may have heard me say it before, it's like the whole thing about lucky charms, you know? How many of you out there believe lucky charms work? Some do, some don't. But the majority of Lucky Charms work, and that's been scientifically proven. And it's not because that four-leaf clover or the lucky rabbit's paw or the shoe horse that you carry in your back pocket always pinches when you sit in your car. It's not because of that. It's the fact that you've changed your perception. It's the fact that you've changed your thinking. So the reason why Lucky Charms work is the fact that you've attached a positive thing to an item. So you think, okay, I've got a lucky stone in my pocket, therefore I will succeed at this. And that lays that seed of thought. That has changed how you think. Automatically more courageous because you feel you're lucky. And if you try, you succeed. The problem is sometimes we almost talk ourselves out of trying. So the lucky charm does work. So, okay, you may not want to carry a horse's shoe in your pocket or a four-leaf clover if you can find one. But, you know, be your own lucky charm. You know, say, okay, I'm feeling lucky. So therefore, I'm going to have a go. So just having this attitude to try, to change, to move forward, you know, will make a difference. And you'll find that this little bit of traction you get into a positive outlook will make a difference. So yeah, coming back to, you know, you want to be the master of your own destiny. I know I've used some of these kind of like taglines, but you know, they are true. But you've got to make them work. They won't happen by doing nothing. What happens by doing nothing is you lose your power. So we need to do something. And with anything in life, especially for myself, there's always been an investment in time, in exploration, for self-inquiry. And then you discover some tools. And this is the kind of things I learned when I started to regain my power, starting to understand what my values are, what my core principles are, you know, the kind of the five main love, peace, happiness, truth, those kind of things that you want, bliss and joy, those kind of things are innate in a lot of people. So you may find your value that you kind of think, yeah, this is my, is similar or fit into that category of about five. So once you start this self-inquiry and you take a few steps down of courage and you begin to see change, you think, okay, this is something that could work. And then the other thing is going to be, in the same way, like I mentioned earlier when I was talking directly, that sometimes we can step back into our own comfort zone, and that's where change doesn't happen. So stepping back because it feels easier, because it feels more comfortable, you think, it's not for me, I'll go back to where I was. You're going back to the victim. You're going back to the status quo where nothing will change and everything will stay the same. So it's that kind of attitude, that change of attitude to think, okay, no, this is for me. I'm going to write my own story. I'm going to be in charge. I'm the only one who should be making decisions for myself. I'm the only one deciding what happens. I'm not being flippant about it in the sense I understand that at work, you've got to follow certain procedures and protocols, and obviously you've got to follow certain laws of the land, which is fine. I'm talking about personal things that you can control. Where you can stand up and speak out and make a choice, say different things. So those kind of things. I think, you know, the other things, you know, I'd mention is just a few things that I've noticed that, you know, an easy way where you can lose a power throughout the day. And I was checking myself in my journey where, you know, where have I done this? And the first thing is, you know, complaining. You know, don't waste energy on complaining. You know, I used to do that quite a lot. I do a little bit every now and again just to see what it's like, but it's much reduced. You know, a simple thing about traffic, you know, stuck in traffic and you start getting, not road rage, but you know, you get a bit kind of worked up and you get a bit angry and you get complain about this, they should do that, the road works this and the road works that, and it always happens to me, it's always on this stretch. There may be observations, but, you know, you can sense there's a negative energy with that. And I used to be like that. I used to complain a lot. And, yeah, you may have important destinations to get to. You may have a pickup to do. You may have an airport journey to make to pick someone up or catch a flight. So there could be some not so nice consequences stuck in a jam. But the thing is, you know, at that point, when you start complaining, you're wasting energy. What you should be doing at that point is starting to find solutions. And I think the wisdom that comes out of that is to change the things that you actually can. You know, so say if you were stuck in a car and you had to catch a flight or pick someone up from the airport or pick your daughter up from school, or whatever it is, you know, instead of complaining, you said, okay, I'm stuck in a traffic jam. What do I need to make this right? Move the traffic along? Well, that's going to happen in sweet time. So, okay, if you've got your mobile phone with you and you're stationary, you may want to, you know, use it if it's legal. I think you can't use your phone if your engine's running and keys in. So I'm not telling you to use a mobile phone, but you know, make communication to somebody when it's safe to do so and legal to tell them the situation and get your daughter picked up, or if someone else is in the car with you, they can make the call for you. So what I'm trying to say is when you're complaining, you're losing the power to actually think about a solution. You're not able to change the situation. So concentrate and change what you can. So that's another important bit. I remember once I was driving to my workplace. It's only a 45-minute journey, but it took me actually 3.5 hours, just once, on the M40 and M25, good old M25. And I was going to work, and it wasn't important, but I like to be on time. So I was getting a little bit annoyed that I'm not going to be on time. But, you know, when I realized I'm stuck there, there's nothing I can do, there's a lorry that's jackknifed, I'm not going anywhere in a hurry. I just rang at work, told them to cancel my patients, apologize. If there's any patients who are concerned, they can give me my number and they can call me or whatever it was. And I'll be at work whenever I can, but I'll give you an update of the journey. And then I just thought, well, you know, I can't change traffic. What I can change is my situation, which I did by calling up and rearranging it. And then I just thought, well, enjoy the time, you know, hands-free, made a few phone calls to my parents, listened to some music, you know, something was on the radio. So, you know, making the most out of it, you know, even in that shopping queue that, you know, you jump queue to queue and the queue you jump to suddenly slows down. And even then, rather than getting worked up, just take the time out for some silence and reflect on whatever you want to reflect upon. So use that time. So don't waste energy complaining about things. You know, look for what you can do to find change or move forward. And the other thing I find about powerlessness, or when you give it away, in my situation, looking at the times when I was ill, so, you know, having self-pity gives you power, because you're going into that kind of needy status. Help me, I'm not good, or help me, I'm ill. So not having, you know, not getting involved in self-pity, but instead turning towards gratitude. Think about the things that, oh yeah, I have got someone who can care for me. When we're talking about ill health, you know, I can go to the doctor, I can get to the hospital, someone will see me, I will eventually get better. So in situations where you're finding yourself, maybe if you're hurt in a relationship, self-pity, you need to get into out of that mode, because you think again, what am I gaining out of this? What am I gaining by complaining? What am I gaining by feeling self-pity? You know, if you ask those questions, and you've got to remember to ask those questions, otherwise you'll just get into that cycle and just end up being powerless and not do anything about it. So when you ask those questions, you can actually, let me be thankful what I have. Let me be grateful. And people talk about having gratitude. And that's another big thing that's gaining traction. A lot of people are having gratitude journals and practicing gratitude. So I think for me, my natural kind of antidote or opposite to self-pity is gratitude. Be grateful for the things that I have, what I can change, how I can move forwards. And the science is now proving that your state of mind can affect your immunity. So there's studies coming out that saying when you're grateful or practicing gratitude, it boosts your immunity. And the other thing I'm going to talk about is forgiveness. Because another thing I found about this whole power struggle for the self, being powerless and regaining your power, is sometimes when we get angry at somebody and we get frustrated at them, that's a key time where we lose our power. So someone failing to meet our expectations because we're attached to the outcome. And that really, we lose our power. And if we stay in that angry state, we stay in that frustration, and we stay in that kind of hard done by state, the person who caused this or perceived to have caused this upon you, it doesn't affect them. The only person it's harming, the only person who's losing their power is you. So, you know, when you're getting angry and frustrated, the only thing to do is forgive. And forgiveness really allows you to accept what's happened, allows you to move on. And what it does is, by allowing you to move on, the anger, that frustration, that again causes a biochemical change in you, if you're acting in a forgiving way of what's happened, then again, there's benefit. One, there's benefit. You start regaining your power. You stop losing it in frustration and anger. But then you also gain by not having this negative energy. You know, going from forgiveness, looking for solutions, thinking of a way out from the situation, you move on forwards. And again, the forgiveness, when you practice that, there's a certain amount of kindness. And studies, again, are showing when you practice forgiveness and kindness, it reduces that stress. Because how many of you get angry and you get all worked up and you get all stressed about it and all het up, and you can feel your temperature rising, and you can feel you getting red in the face, and you can feel your heart palpitating? You know, so that's anger for you. But if you're able to forgive, those palpitations will reduce, you know, the blood pressure goes down, the stress levels decrease. So actually, by being in a forgiving state, by practicing forgiveness, it gives you health benefits, as well as regaining your power. Because each one of these things where you lose your power, it's taken away from your connection to your core. This is why we're talking about that self-core, because that's where your power resides, having that connection with the core. And that's what happens in daily life. And that's what happened to me personally when I was going through my journey of self-inquiry. I was losing myself and losing that connection. And over the years, I've seen how I've improved in my connection and how I've managed to not give away my power and maintain my power and continue on my journey and make a better job of it. It's almost like, you know, the flow of energy, the field, you know, the energy flow. If there's a blockage, and the blockage could be due to your anger and not forgiving somebody, and that creates a block. Unless forgiveness comes and melts that away, the flow of energy can't happen. The flow of exchange can't happen. The flow of life can't happen. So it's quite a negative energy to have. So when you can forgive, you're allowing that flow to happen. If that flow in life happens, then power starts to flow. You regain some stability and regain power, and you can move forward. And that episode can then develop a little bit more. So these are things that I kind of came across in my own journey, really letting go of this anger. And the thing is, when you forgive, there's a certain type of forgiveness. It's got to be unconditional forgiveness, you know, where you really mean it, like, yeah, I forgive you. Yeah, that's not going to work. They're going to know you're not genuine. So it's really, again, and this kind of genuine forgiving happens again when you're connected with your values, what I mentioned earlier. So if you're connected with your core values, then when you do an action, forgiveness, then it comes across as being a genuine response, the genuine altruistic kind of action. The other person feels it, you definitely have felt it, and you've let that go, so it won't come back. And if you've let it go fully, it won't come back, and it's still niggling in the back of your mind. So it's having that deeper forgiveness, that unconditional forgiveness that really works. So those are the kind of main things about power that I found for myself. And I think the hardest thing for my journey, and I think the hardest thing that people may find, is this kind of changing our perception, changing our thoughts. And that really takes a little bit of time and practice. Like with anything, it does involve effort, involves engaging in what you need to do. So if you ask those three questions, who am I? Understand your greatness, understand your qualities. What do I want? You know, what do you want out of life? What's your journey? And what do I need to do to gain or get there? Then those questions will start to unlock that connection, find out what's going on. So changing the perception of who I am, you know, what is my greatness? Not that I'm just a little cog in the big machine. No, I'm great in my own self. I'm playing my role perfectly. I'm doing what needs to be done. Having some respect for yourself, that self-respect, enables you to have some feeling of gratitude to the self as well, that you're able to make these changes, you're able to, that you are important. And, you know, it's not a lie. It's not something false. You know, everybody has a uniqueness. Everyone has a gift. Sometimes we don't know what it is, and sometimes we haven't been able to access it. But by connecting to the core and understanding that you are this being, that it is inside you, and only when we connect to that can we begin to discover who we really are. And only then can we discover that actually this power or this powerlessness that we feel is us. I'm kind of responsible for it, not what's going on the outside. I'm responsible for it because I've actually got the choice to either give it away or not to give it away. And not to give it away is by saying, no, this is not what I believe. It's not what I want. This is my value. This is what I want. I'm going to have the courage to say what I feel and respect myself and stay in my self-respect because it's who I am. So yeah, you may be a nanny, you may be a father, you may be a brother, you may be a partner, you may be a postman, you may be a dentist, you may be a surgeon, you may be whatever. But that is perfection because that's your role. You're doing that in the way only you can do. No one else can do that. So, you know, a little thing that I did for myself or a little bit of practice is I always tended to, when I was on this kind of journey of self-inquiry and improvement and understanding what I wanted, is to do every task the best I can just to see how I felt and what values would come out and practice kindness. Because what I found is, you know, if a little bypass to be more connected with yourself is practice kindness. And go out your way to be kind. And what happens is just by the act of kindness, biochemically things happen in your body. Chemicals get released, hormones get released, where you feel good. And when you get that feel-good factor, like we said before, you'll do it again and again and again. So, you know, just practice kindness and gratitude. And these things will become a lot easier. And I found that helped me. And it's almost like a little crutch to get to the next level, to the next level. Because you can go quite deep. And sometimes when you go deep, and I know I've been there, sometimes you're a little frightened to go down inside and maybe face some hard truths and face some fears that you have. But unless we face these fears, then nothing changes. You know, you need to, as I say, move outside the box. And when you do that, there's growth. And in that growth lies the power. So it really is tapping into that and changing a perception of who I am. And don't be ashamed of it. You know, I never go, oh, well done, pal. That's a good day's work. We never pat ourselves on the back. You know, we never have this kind of self-respect for ourselves. So I think, you know, this kind of journey of self-empowerment is kind of a selfish journey in the sense of like you have to start with the self, have to start looking after yourself, nurturing the power unit which is inside us, connect to that power unit. And only when you discover that, that's when you can start to regain your power, plug some of those holes where you can start to lose your power. And what happens, you find lots of ways to do that. Some could be through exercise, some through art, some through singing. So, you know, automatically, sometimes you'll come across something where you think, ah, I feel better. So, you know, only you know what resonates with you. Could be writing, could be journaling. But these little kind of escape routes to reconnect to your creative side, again, is another way of regaining your power because it builds that self-identity. It gets you to think about what you're writing, what you're drawing, what you're thinking about. So these kind of things can also help as well. And I found that my creativity and my work helped me to create a certain flavor that I believed in. That was my deeper thinking, my core values that came into it. So things like that can really make a difference. And we can begin to regain that power. And what happens is, when you build that power up, you know, it can get depleted, because we all come across little obstacles in the road, little bumps in the road, and we can lose our power. So it's important to regain and recharge. And some of the methods that I use, and like I mentioned, using creative art therapies and writing and journaling. But the ones that I use personally for myself is having meditation, which really helps. A lot of people are practicing mindfulness as well, which I use a little bit of. So really allowing this time of self-reflection, this pause through breathing, through meditation, to reconnect to that core of yourself. Because without that extra time put aside, it's not going to happen in a busy day or busy life. So you have to make that time. And when you connect that time, you allow yourself that time for introspection and that connection, healing the self, connecting to the inner power unit, then that's when you can start to feel change. And there's another deeper step beyond that, where the universal power that exists in everything that's connected through nature, in the garden, to the plants, to the animals, to other human beings. There's a whole energy field across the globe which we can tap into, like, you know, the network, the, you know, broadband network. You know, it's a network that we can tap into, log onto, and in the same way, it's energy field that we can tap into and regain energy. And then there's a deeper step of, you know, the kind of higher level energy, the consciousness of divinity and other powers, where you can drain that unending source whenever you feel your self energy is depleted away. So for me, it's a journey internally to discover that kind of everlasting power unit. It is everlasting. We forget that. And once you tap into it, when you do lose your power, which, you know, you do every now and again, you quickly regain it. So your major state is in a powerful state, not in a powerless state. So I think I've kind of mentioned the things I wanted to mention. I'm just going to check the time. I think we're just about wrapping up. Artiban, are there any particular questions that I can take, or...
You'd like to do the questions first, or would you like to do the meditation, and then that'll give people a chance to send in more questions?
Okay, yeah, let's do that then. I've got about five minutes?
3 minutes is lovely.
Perfect, okay. So yeah, I've shared a few ideas and thoughts, and if you have any questions, you can pop them in the chat. So it's just going to take a little bit of time. If you just sit back and just let your body relax into the chair, sofa, wherever you may be, you can open your eyes, close your eyes. Just take a few deep breaths. Just breathing out, breathing in slowly and deeply. And as you do that, slow, deep breaths out, you feel an automatic calm coming up across you. Maintain that, focusing on the breath. And a little body scan. If you've got any muscle aches, just give them a little twitch or a little tweak and let them out. Maintaining nice, slow, but deep breathing. And you maybe think about the question that I ask. Knowing who I am, what's your core value? Do you resonate with love? Do you resonate more with courage? Do you resonate with peace, truth? Feel your core value. You know deep down what feels right inside. Once you feel a core value, that's you. That's part of you. Understand that's one of the many values that you have, that you hold. Just because one is resonating more than the other doesn't mean you haven't got the rest, but they're all there. And they'll be used when they need to be used. But hold on to the one that you feel connected to. Feeling that's your true self. Feeling that energy within. Knowing that there are some more values of power. Once you know who you are, you can begin to think of what you want. What do you want in your journey? What do you want your story to say about yourself? How do you want to explore this wonderful journey that we have? The opportunity we get day in, day out. Once you get an idea of what you want to do and how you want to experience it, then you'll begin to get some answers of what you need to do. Just holding that thought, the values, the feelings, and the actions that you will create going forwards. Understand that is you, powerful. Understand your right to your own power. Promise yourself that you'll not give it up. And if it does happen, you know how to regain it in a second. So taking a few more deep breaths. See if any other values resonate. Enjoy those. Begin to feel that you are a powerful being. Slowly holding on to those feelings of power, having a glimpse of yourself, you come back and return to where you are, sitting comfortably.
Thank you, Pavan. Okay, we've got a couple of questions that have come in. The first one is, can you give us step by step how to find your own truth and change from weak to strong?
So I hope you've got another hour. I think step by step approach to finding your own truth. I think the first thing is you've got to allow yourself to do that. Just spend some time quietly and understand, look, reflect back on times where you felt good, where you felt happy, where you felt in control. It could be a holiday, it could be in a scene in nature, it could be whatever. But understand those moments and how you felt. You felt awe, you felt wonder, you felt exhilarated, you felt uplifted, whatever those good feelings. So find a time in your life where you felt this. And then make a note of it and write it down so it's there, it's in black and white. And you can revisit that again and later on or another day. And then you create a list of these feelings that you felt, these kind of feelings of awe and wonder and gratefulness and happiness and sad, not feeling sad at all. But when you understand that and you think, well, hold on, these feelings happened when I was on holiday. This happened when I was skiing down the slopes with the wind in my hair and, or on a beach with the sun on my back or in nature where it smelt so fresh and alive and the sounds. But I'm sitting in, Harrow, in my room. But you can still feel like that. And then what happens is it's showing you that these feelings, your truth can be that. It's just that you were there and you experienced it, but you still experienced it from away from that point. So it may be on holiday or maybe skiing, but you still experienced it in Harrow or wherever you may be. So that's within you. So what I did was I kind of got all these feelings that made me feel good, and the qualities that I felt people have told me that I have that you sometimes forget that you have. Make that list, and it may be very slow when it starts, but you'll add things to that list. And when that list grows, then you start realizing what you're about. So you can see what you resonate with you, because these are you. These are the feelings you felt, and you can conjure those up anytime you want. And you can maybe ask the help of people around you. So, why are you my friend? What do you think is a good thing about me? Or even ask what's not so good, and you can work on that as well. So I think the step-by-step approach is really having that exploration, you know, getting that investigation hat on and exploring what you felt and experienced and those emotions you had, because those are yours. And you'll know what value is attached to that. It could be fun, joy, freedom, love, truthfulness, for someone so being so truthful. And that, and you want to build on that, because those are you, and you want to bring those out anytime. So when you are feeling disconnected and powerless, you can think, well, that was me, that is me, and I can draw upon that. And it may be, for me, it was initially, I need to take a bit of time out. So I'd walk away from the situation for a little bit, get a glass of water, buy some time, get a moment of pause, so I can reconnect to that and understand that, like, this is who I am, this is how I feel. And when you go back into that situation, you've got a different bit of calm. You've got a different outlook. You've engaged your value, your truth, your love, your empathy, whichever value you're working with, and you can work in a different situation as opposed to before, where you didn't connect to your values and you reacted from the ego point of view. You just jumped in and got defensive, and that block happened where there was no flow, just headbutting each other. So I think the step-by-step approach, I would say, is that self-reflection, that self-inquiry to work out the times you felt well about yourself and the things that made you feel good, because those are your values, and you can carry those with you anywhere you go. And then allowing that time to connect to those again when you feel that you're getting a little lost, or you're feeling a little slip of power. And you can get that back within seconds with practice. Sometimes you can work on it more, but when you need it, it can come back in seconds. Hope that was most of the answer. I may have missed off some bits. If you have, you can mention it again.
Okay. Let me, because questions are coming in, and so let me move on. And we might cover other things. Mm. So, complaining can bring about many changes. For example, we can't accept injustice and loss of our values. Mm. So how do you use complaining to bring effective changes?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think there is, it's like the definition of complaining. So, you know, what I was trying to get to was the negative side of complaining. I had a situation today where an engineer was booked to come in to sort out my broadband and didn't turn up and got the wrong day, and I rang up to tell him what had happened, not to complain, but tell him what had happened, what should have happened, and how it's going to get resolved. So what I'm trying to say is, it's just the perception of the complaint. So complaining for the sake of complaining, where you can't change anything, is complaining, in my view. So it's just the definition of it. So yes, you know, when there's something that needs to be done, where someone's flight is being outside your house, you need to tell somebody about it. You may call it, you know, on the website, it's a complaint. But what you're really doing is viewing it differently. So how can I improve my situation? What do I need to do to voice what needs to be corrected? So I would say it's more to do with the language of it. So complaining is, I think, when you complain, make a lot of noise, but not really get a solution out of it. But when you're actually getting an injustice or correct something, then I would say it's kind of an advisory thing to suggest a better way forward. So it's just changing the language, because when I then engage with the operator, they were much more helpful rather than me being angry and shouting, oh, you didn't do this, you're rubbish, I'm gonna leave. It was like, look, this happened, there's got to be a reason for it, but let's find a solution. And it moved forward. So I think complaining is one thing, but trying to take things forward in a different way is probably the one I'm talking about, trying to fight injustice, not complaining, but make a stand, have the courage to say it. And when you say it in a genuine way, then you're more likely to have an impact. If it's disingenuous, where you're trying to gain something which is not quite right, then it won't happen. But when you do it in a genuine space to get a better outcome for yourself or people around you, chances are it'll probably get some traction. So that's the difference, I would say. It's just the definition of complaining.
Lovely.
Suggesting.
Lovely, thank you. The next question is, sometimes the moment of losing power, for example, when you feel rejected, is so overwhelming that it's impossible to react in a rational way. Mm. Do you have any thoughts on how to deal with the situation at that moment?
Yeah, I've been there. So I think what happens, there is a moment of call it grief or mourning or whatever, where the rejection is quite deep and has an impact on you. And I think sometimes you've got to just accept how you feel. You feel terrible. You feel not worthy. Accept that feeling. It's nothing wrong. I felt it. I'll probably feel it again. Every human being will go through this. So I think having the acceptance of how you're feeling, your emotions, they're absolutely right and entitled. So accept that feeling. You may feel really poor and low and everything. So the first thing when I look back on these kind of things is like when I was immature in my development, I wasn't accepting them. And I just kept fighting and kept going back to that feeling of rejection. But now it's like, yeah, I feel a bit disappointed. I feel a bit sad. But then I changed my perception. So the first thing is when you find it hard to change, just accept the feeling. Accept how you are and accept the fact that it's common humanity. We all feel the same. So you're not different. You're not alone. It happens. So in that, you find some solace. Then obviously, you know, I find talking to somebody who I trust, family member, a friend, a spouse, talking to somebody about that really helps because they'll reinforce that. Yeah, don't worry about it. It's normal. Things will change. And then the other side of it is the rejection. You have to understand what I tell myself, and I believe it to be true, is they're not rejecting me per se. They're rejecting something about what I've said or done. So they're not rejecting me as the being, they're that power source, the inner core self. They're not rejecting me. They're rejecting maybe what I said or rejecting what I did or rejecting what I proposed. It could be a relationship, which is a bit of a deeper rejection. But I always say they're rejecting something that I've expressed, not rejecting me. So make that differentiation. It's never a rejection of you. So that allows that bit of space to move forward. Then I think, well, what did I do wrong? What could I do better? And maybe they didn't do anything wrong, but it's how they perceive that rejection. So it's not always your fault. It's the person who's rejecting probably didn't get what they expected. So it's their expectation hasn't been met, but it's their problem that they had this expectation. You acted as best you could, knowing what you did, as best you could with all the inputs. Yeah, so I think having that remember, it's not you that are rejecting, it's something that was expressed by you that was taken the wrong way that led to the rejection. I think that is really key, and that creates that space where we can then, okay, connect with your true self, say I'm not like this, I'm a good person, or whatever it is, or my presentation of my architectural drawing was wrong because I didn't get the brief and I got it wrong and they didn't see it. So have a conversation with that person who rejected it so you can get your side across and think, actually, I didn't see that. You're right. So, you know, I'm not going to reject your proposal for the drawings or plan or whatever it was. So having some conversation, if it's possible, for when you got rejected. So those are the key things is allow that emotion to happen. Feel bad, sad, whatever it needs to, because common humanity happens to everybody. Then quickly, as soon as you can, understand that's not you that getting rejected, but something you expressed or said or did or presented. And then possibly, if it's possible, to have a dialogue with that person, you can solve it. If not, you can understand how else you can then move forwards in life or with the project or whatever it is, how you could possibly do things differently to avoid a situation like this.
Thank you. We're coming to the end of the evening. Now, I don't know if you need to rush off because there are a number of other questions.
I'm good. Till you kick me out.
All right, we won't kick you out, but let me just make a few announcements and then people can leave as they need to. So I just want to highlight on Sunday, this weekend, 19th of July, we have a talk with a senior meditator, Sudesh Didi. She's going to be speaking on how to love yourself and others unconditionally, and sharing tools on how to cultivate love. The session is at 11 a.m. on Sunday the 19th. So do register and join us for that. There are also the seminars this week, the personal development seminars, which are Building Resilience and Thrive, as well as Make Gratitude a Habit. There's the morning meditations as well as the lunchtime meditations. You're very welcome to join. If you'd like to pay this forward. If you'd like to see the talks continue, if you want to share it with friends, that's amazing. That would be great. Please do so. But if you'd like to pay it forward, all you need to do is go back to the Inner Space website, and there's a link that says donations in the menu bar, and you can make a donation online. But please do tell your friends about it as well. So those were my announcements, and we can go back to asking the questions. So the next question is, how can I keep my power alive when whatever I try so hard to achieve seems not to go the way I wish?
Good one. it's a little bit like that rejection scenario where you need to understand why isn't it going the way it should be going, because you know you're putting a lot of effort in and you think, okay, this time it's going to be fine, it's going to work, and then it doesn't happen and you think, well, I did the best I could, and then you've got to get yourself up again, put all that energy and power again, and it may not happen, and it depletes power pretty much because you put a lot in there and your expectation may be quite high and it doesn't come off, and the drop is equally in length on the way down. So it can be quite draining. I think what to remember is what I mentioned earlier about the person who got rejected. It's the expectation not being met causes the rejection. So in the same way, whatever I put in power, put in a lot of my energy to move something forwards, and it doesn't happen, I do get a little bit disappointed, but I think it wasn't in vain, because what needs to be said was said and done, it's out there. But what I need to do is think, well, what more could I do? There's always something more you can do. And then again, a lot of, you know, this journey is quite exploratory. You have to find out, what else can I do? Was the person listening not thinking that way? Did they want to hear something different, or did I do something that wasn't quite seen in the way it should have been seen? And then represent it again in a different way. And eventually it will get done. There are certain circumstances where you'll have to just basically maybe get a second opinion, say, look, am I doing this right? Am I missing something obvious, just to make sure? But the other time, sometimes when you've kind of got to a point where you've kind of done it again and again and again and again, you must think, well, hold on, there's something fundamentally not right here. And sometimes you may just have to step back for a little bit, allow for some time for learning or breathing or regaining your power to go again. So I think it is quite important to try to have a healthy understanding of how many times you can try again till it becomes detrimental, where you lose hope. So I think you've got to try again and again and again to a point where you think, hold on, this is done 3-4 times, it hasn't happened. So am I really missing something? Ask somebody that, you know, does this sound right? Am I missing something? Maybe get some more help and then take it forward again. Or you may learn something, actually, I should have done this way, or I should have done this, or, and then it may succeed. But equally, something, no, that sounds fine. It may be on the other side where it's not happening, and therefore you may have to change arena, change the person, change the situation, change locality, whatever it is. You may have to do something drastic. But it's almost like that kind of that salesman, you know, the double glazing salesman, where you've got to keep knocking on the door till you get that sale. And to keep that power alive, that was the original question, you've got to have self-belief in what you're selling is the best product. So in the same way, whatever you're getting across or even putting the energy in, having that belief as a self is the best project. So that will buy you a lot of mileage when you get, say, multiple rejections. And so I think that's the thing, just having the belief that whatever you're selling or putting forward is the best thing. And then when you've got that self-belief, you'll have a lot more energy. You know, when you don't believe in something, your energy quickly think, well, you're not going to sell it, are you? Because you don't believe in it so much. So, you know, maybe understanding what you're pushing forward is have full belief and understanding in that, and then take it forward, and you have the energy to keep pushing it until it reaches its goal. Or then you'll maybe discover, actually, I need to change this to get it over the line. So I think having that belief of whatever you're putting forward is the best thing, and that will itself give you that energy again and again. But ultimately, if it comes down to you've done it a million times, you think, actually, I may need to change something, what I'm selling or what I'm doing or what I'm putting forward, or change who I'm telling it to or selling it to, or change the situation there. So there's a couple of things to take away from there. and I think they worked well for me. But having that belief in what you're doing is the main key to re-energize that power. And that belief in yourself as well, importantly. Hope that's okay. Hope that answered the question.
Thank you. Yes. Next question. With so much going on, we become depleted and actually identify weakness with weakness. And when you are the main person your children, family look up to, how does one get courage back? Because weakness or weak situations become stronger.
Okay, deeper question. Yeah, I think for me, you know, I've got a family, I've got responsibilities, and I know what you're saying. You know, you have to be that beacon of light, you know, the pillar of strength, and you've got to keep showing that and be that. So there have been times where I know I haven't fulfilled my duty as best I could, and I wanted not to show that weakness, and I took it upon myself, you know, took it upon my shoulders and burdened that and carried that with me. And that had a detrimental effect on me. It affected my mood, it affected what I did, it affected how I interact with people. I became a little bit withdrawn. But I thought that was the right thing to do because I didn't want to show that weakness to the family or to the people around me. Eventually it got to the point where I knew that wasn't the right thing. So there's two things. One is, again, sharing your feelings with the people. If it's a conversation you can have with somebody who's understanding, your child maybe too young to have a deeper conversation, or your spouse you can have a conversation with and share what you feel. Because lo and behold, you tend to find the person that you don't want to show this weakness to or let down, they're more than happy to help. They're absolutely more than happy to help. And they may even tell you off for not coming to them earlier and that you've been through that. You know, because if a person came to me or came to you, you'd instantly help them out and said, oh, don't worry, we can do it together. So I think the first thing is either have a conversation to the person that's involved in this kind of this perception of weakness and not doing your duty. I think for me, what I did was I was determined. You know, I was that double-glazing salesman. I was more determined to find inner strength, to find what I needed to do to build upon what little strength I had left to keep this going on, to keep this kind of show of strength, which may be right, which may be wrong. And for me, it seemed the right thing to do rather than having that conversation, which for me at the time seemed harder. So for me, the other thing is to develop your inner strength, to keep that strength, that power going, so you don't show that weakness. Now, that would work if you put the power in, and it could take the work in to discover that, and it could take a little bit of time, and you may not have that time because things are happening very fast. So, you know, the conversation then comes back. But the other thing is you understand that, and for me, when I was going through my periods was understand my weakness, you know, what led me to be in that position? How can I avoid it? So again, having that self-inquiry, that detective work to find out where those traps are, to avoid those. It could be better budgeting, it could be better conversation, better friendships, it could be whatever it could be, but exploring those as well. So the third prong is to use those weaknesses to identify those and build strength into those. And sometimes you can't work on a weakness directly. So the way it works for me is find the strengths that you have, find the things that you're good at, build those up. And what tends to happen automatically, like tagging and dragging, your weaknesses improve a little bit. They improve, well, for me, they improved enough where I can control them and let them not come out too much. So where you can't work on a weakness directly, at least it highlighted or showcased where I needed to work. And if I couldn't work on it directly, I would get back to what I could change, what I said earlier, work on what you can change. Build those other strengths up, and as you build those other strengths, your whole level increases, dragging those weaknesses to a high level where they're not considered as much of a weakness and they're more manageable. So that's what I would say to that. Again, if I haven't answered the question fully, do ask a follow-up question, but that for me worked. Again, takes time and dedication, but it's a conviction, and you know, this kind of thing to fulfilled duty is quite strong in me, and I'm sure it is in you, and that drives you as well, gives you motivation. But again, what I realized in this journey is, again, I had to come back to myself, my core, had to connect with that to make these extra steps.
What is the mechanism by which one can forgive someone when you're angry, frustrated, and finding it impossible to focus on the situation?
Yeah, nice one. Happens every day. I think the thing is, when you're angry, the first thing I've learned is silence. You know, something's happened, it's not right, you're angry, they're going to be angry, or probably not be in a good state of mind, or they're ready to give you some more. So the first thing is silence, not to respond. Because what happens when you get that response and you really want to be like, no, it's your ego responding to that, because no one likes to be told they can't do this, you're no good at that, you shouldn't have done that, it's your fault. No one likes to be told that, especially the ego doesn't like to be told that. That'll respond first. So you really need to bite your lip and go into silence. Even for a second, even for 5 seconds, the longer you can do, the better, because that will give time to put your ego in check and allow you that space I keep talking about to connect to a little bit deeper into yourself and come from a more neutral or a less angry space, if you want to call it that. And there have been times where, you know, you have to say, look, actually, I can't speak to you now. I'm going to come back to you. And you about turn and walk off. So it's extricating yourself from that situation, either through silence initially, to put the brakes on to your anger response, to create that time to understand what happened, and then maybe able to see the situation from both sets of eyes, your eyes and the other person's eyes. And when you can possibly have a more detached look at the situation, as in no emotion involved, you may see there could be something that you could have said or done that may have construed it as not being right, therefore led to the other person to respond, which then led to you responding in a way that, I didn't mean this, da, 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 da. So it's allowing that space, and only through silence or stepping away from the situation and then looking back at it later on, i.e. letting the dust settle or sleeping on it overnight, and then seeing it in a kind of a neutral space and saying, actually, you know what? Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or I could have said it better. Or you may say, you know what? No, I was right. I said what I said and I totally believe in it. And again, when you feel like that, you can say, look, I'm sorry you feel that way. And I'm sorry it came across that way, but that was not my intention. I respect how you feel, but this is how I felt. So let's leave it at that, and maybe we'll talk about it later, or we'll leave it for another day and walk away. So that kind of forgiveness is kind of true. It's deep, it's genuine, in the sense of, like, you understand that they may have seen it wrongly, and you understand their truth may not be your truth. So you can understand, actually, I can see why they could have been angry. I know my truth. I'm happy with what I said and did, so I'm sticking to that. But for them, they didn't see it that way. So it's almost allowing them to say, well, no, you can feel like that. It's quite okay. It's not what I believe in, and I don't think it's correct, but you're entitled to that opinion. So let's accept it the way it is, and we'll talk about it later. So it's trying to maintain that genuine feeling when you forgive somebody. And like I said, only forgive them if it's genuine. They're like, oh, sorry. Are you really? Yeah, absolutely. 100% really sorry. Yeah, that's not going to work. So don't say it. Just take some time out and then come back to it. And just say it like the way I was saying that, you know, I believe what I said was true. I'm sorry you didn't see it that way. But let's leave it at that, and maybe we'll talk about it later. So I think creating that space is important, through silence or walking away from a situation.
I think you've mostly answered the next question, but you might have something you want to add or expand on. And it is there ever a good time to walk away? And is this powerful?
Yeah, I think there is a good time to walk away. I think there's two things, because walking away shouldn't be seen as negative. So sometimes when you walk away too quickly, it may infuriate the other person. So, you know, apart from, say, like when I say have a disagreement with a person or a patient, you must ensure that the person's safety. So you just don't storm out and leave the other person vulnerable. even though they may be upset. So I think storming out sometimes is a little bit too much. I will just take a few seconds, just check, you know, the person's safe and secure, and just say, look, I'm leaving this conversation. I'm not prepared to have it now, so I'm leaving now. So announce that you're doing it. So there's a good way to do it. Just because you don't want to leave something and something happens afterwards and you have regret, oh, she only stayed and I shouldn't have done that. Just say, look, I'm not enjoying this. It's not going the right way. It's not gone how I expected. I'm going to end this conversation. I'm going to leave now so we can pick it up later, or let's give it a few days and we'll connect later. So I think when you walk away, announce it, make sure it's happening. So you've told them and they know it, and they'll accept that more actually, rather than walking away and say, well, how dare you walk away? You know, it could inflame the situation. So whenever I'm on the phone sometimes, I'll say to the person, look, this conversation is going nowhere. I'm going to end this conversation. Is that okay? Almost getting permission. So they're like, oh, okay. Or say no. Say, look, I'm really sorry, but I have to end this conversation. I'm going to put the phone down now. And then, you know, so announce it. So there is a proper way to walk away. And the other thing is, but do it soon. Don't stay there and take in the firing line. Don't keep taking bullets. So as soon as you feel uncomfortable and you think it's not going to go right, make your announcement, stage exit left.
Thank you. That was actually very useful. Next question. How do I regain my self-confidence and reclaim my power, as I've been out of work for almost 2 years and still can't land a job? I used to be a high flyer, but it's like I've hit rock bottom.
Okay. So I've been to rock bottom or close to it and back. And the good thing about it, there is a bounce back from there. That's what I felt anyway. There's going to be a bounce back. There always is. And sometimes you think you've hit rock bottom. In my case, there's a bit more to go still. And it's hard, but you do bounce back. I think with confidence for myself, and you know, I think it probably applied to most situations, is the fact that, and I did it late, but I did it and it did work out, is you're going to have to rebuild. You know, with anything, it's like deconstruction, reconstruction. And in my journey, I had to deconstruct some of my false ideas and reconstruct the true identity of who I am, that these questions I asked myself. So one of the ways to reconstruct confidence and, you know, is to actually write down a list of all the things you've achieved. It may sound cheesy, it may sound corny, but it's a thing you have to do. Write down all the things that you achieved. You said you were a high flyer. I thought I was doing well. And I'm sure these things are true. So write down the things that you're good at. You know, what got you into the position that got you there in the first place? Because those are good qualities. So get them out there. Write them down on a piece of paper because they're your qualities. You know, crystallize them, black and white. And once you've done that, you will then start to see, actually, yeah, okay, this is me. And what you'll do, you'll draw up a list of how you were back in the heyday, in the golden age, you know, when you were there. Obviously, times are now more difficult and you've kind of, identified with the situation now, and hence losing that connection to your true self, because that confidence that you're kind of lacking is because you've disconnected to the values and the qualities you had when you were high flying, when I was high flying, when I was in my kind of prime kind of thing. But like I said earlier, with the emotions that when you're, say, skiing or doing something or you're feeling exhilarated, they're inside you. So these qualities at the beginning when you were in a position, they're still there. They're still there inside you somewhere. They just need an arena to be expressed. So I think the first thing is to regain confidence, is to just start thinking about, this is you, this was you, this is you, this will be you. And also make a list and almost have a real, like an affirmation of it every day, like this is you. And sometimes, you know, coming back, and I know job situation, especially now, it's a bit tough out there. But you know what I've noticed some of my patients and friends are doing is some voluntary work just to get back out in the arena, just to get back out with human contact and again get your values to work, get some of your qualities to work, and then you'll get reconnected to what you can do. So even some voluntary work in maybe not the profession you're in, but something just locally, helping a local charity or something, just to get that connection again, people to see your value, automatically that will trigger, oh yeah, that was me. And then you'll have your list of values that you've written down. You know that to you somewhere deep down. It's just the fact that you've drifted quite far away from it. So the power will come from exploring what they are, writing them down, making sure that they, you say to yourself, these belong to me, this is me. And then finding a way, how can I do to get them out again? And that's like going out in the world again, connecting with human beings. I know there's lockdown and social distancing. That's fine. Things can still happen. And eventually, you know, you'll open enough doors and one door will lead to another door, and you probably end up to a position where you want to be. Maybe in your own occupation that you had before, maybe in a different occupation, but you feel more fulfilled and that confidence will slowly go back. So it's rebuilding it with things that you know work well. Like I said in my early thing is, you know, work on things that you're good at. That automatically builds confidence in that. And again, they will hopefully lift the other ones out a little bit so you can get confidence back in that. But I think the key thing is having that social interaction at a level where you're almost doing voluntary work, where you can rekindle that belief again, because it's there. You know, I've been there, lost, and you get back on the horse and it goes again. Sometimes the hurdle is it can take longer than you think, so be prepared to keep at it. You know, keep this kind of gratitude journal of yourself, it will pay dividends. I'm sure it will pay dividends.
Thank you. I think there's a couple more questions, yeah. Believe it or not. So there's one question right at the beginning. You were saying about how we let go of our power to others. But isn't it possible sometimes that when you try to control situations, you spend too much power? And that maybe the alternative is letting the situation run and seeing what happens and stepping in when it's needed?
Correct. In the sense of like, that's the kind of analysis which I agree with. So, so fighting the battles, and like I said earlier, that you can win and change situations that you can change and not what you can't change. So it's like, trying to make the change that you want to implement. If it fails, it fails. You think, actually, this is going nowhere, then you conserve your power. You've made it known what needs to be done, and you've kind of made the comment of what needs to be said, so it's out there. But change's not happening yet. The time probably isn't right for whatever reason. Maybe your conviction isn't there, or maybe the person listening isn't open to that suggestion then. So yeah, you're right. I agree with you. It's time to retract into yourself, maintain that boundary, the healthy boundary where, okay, I'll be quiet, I'll allow it to be, but I'm not going to let it overwhelm me. It's not going to start eroding into my values or what I believe in. But I'll be quiet, I'll let it be. But that's the balance, that boundary. You've got to have a healthy boundary where you know where to stop, because you're pushing, and you're thinking about the earlier question, you kind of losing the power because it's not changing. So you should step back a little bit into your boundary, the line of control, but don't allow the situation then to go past into your being, and then you're losing your power. So it's maintaining that boundary. And when you feel that change, actually, I don't feel comfortable, it's happening again, this is exactly what I was saying, and you can maybe step out with that renewed power and go back into it. So yeah, I totally agree with that. Having a situation where you're staying quiet enough to let the status quo be, but you can only do that if you're sure that you're not allowing your self-esteem, your self-belief to be eroded, your values to be eroded, so you're kind of quite firm. Because if you're connected with yourself, you'll feel, actually, I don't feel right, that doesn't feel good, you don't feel vice about it. So you know that you're allowing it too much, and you've got to step up a little bit and make that kind of push for change. So yeah, it's a bit of a push-pull, but the main thing, like I'm saying, is understand that boundary. So have a healthy boundary where you're pushing enough that you can make change, or you're resisting enough with enough internal power not to take your self-belief and self-esteem away.
Thank you. And I think this is the final question. Can you remain spiritually powerful all the time?
Okay, yes, but with some caveats. The aim is yes, you have to. I think what it is, it's basically, that's my aim. You know, I aim to have a connection with myself all the time, to my inner core, so I don't lose that connection. But, you know, you do lose it sometimes. You're tired or you just haven't invested the time that day. Something's caught you off guard. So technically, you can't maintain it all the time. But the ideal is to maintain it all the time. And the things that I do and things that we can all do is practice at maintaining that connection, whether it's through art, whether it's through meditation, mindfulness, breathing, whatever connection to that takes you to your core and then stay in there. So we're shifting from an external perspective and going internal. So rather than looking at our senses and hearing what we hear about this and that, seeing what we see, the news, the this, the that, rather than that allowing us to lose our power, our spiritual power, is to go inside and live in that space of our core values, our spirit, our soul. So that soul consciousness, that internal belief where my filter of all that comes in, the filter of all my senses is peace, purity, love, courage, empathy, peace, everything like that. So whatever comes in goes out, goes through that filter. So wherever whatever I think, whatever I say, whatever I do, has that value embellished on it. So the aim is to be like that all the time. I try hard, and I'm sure I'm not like that all the time, but that's the goal. And I think we can all try to be that, because if you're trying to be that, you're doing pretty well. You're going to be pretty good. So I think the perfection point will come many years down the line, but the more we practice at it, the more we can maintain that for a longer period, and hopefully forever.
Thank you, Pavan. There are many, many people saying thank you. They thoroughly enjoyed this talk.
Thank you.
Yes, we hope to have you back.
I enjoyed it too. Thank you.
Thank you. And I also want to thank everybody who stayed on, and also thank everybody's questions. So all it takes now is to say good night, and look forward to having you all back soon.
Thank you. Good night. Thank you, everybody.